My name is Alicia Sell. Today is February 14th, 2007, and I am interviewing Miss Mary Divers Hackley, and we are at the Gainsboro Library. How are you today, Miss Hackley?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We're going to start with some background questions about you. Can you tell me when and where you were born?
I was born in Bedford, Virginia, in 1937, January 1937.
And when did you move to Gainsboro? When did your family move
here? My family moved to Roanoke when I was almost seven. We lived on Downing Street in the house that's now across the street from the school administration building. And the first house was over the hill from that one, and then we moved into that house. Same place, same area.
What did your parents do for a living?
My mother was a mom. She was home. So her job was raising seven children. My father worked for the Norfolk and Western Railroad. He was a chef cook for the railroad for a long, long time. Then when I graduated from high school and went to college, my father was employed by Roanoke City Schools, and later on he was employed by OIC, the Opportunity Industrialization Center. Then he went back to the Norfolk and West, and then he retired from there.
You said you had seven brothers and sisters. Where do you fall into that
mix? I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest, okay.
There were really eight of us, but I had a young sister who passed when she was a little over a year old. We were still in Bedford at that time. So I'm the oldest of the group.
Okay. And what were your mother and father's names?
My mother was Mary Rucker, and my dad's John W. Divers.
And Rucker is your mother's maiden name?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you describe your house for us? For instance, was it brick? Did you have a garden?
The first house was two-story. We had a garden. The first one. And it was part brick, part wood. And then the next house in the same area, as I told you, it's still standing. It was brick, completely brick. I had a small garden. That yard was not as large as one of the others. But I can remember we had a lot of trees. There were cedar trees along the front, and in the back you had fruit trees. Apple, apricot. There was not a pear tree, I don't think. There were apricot and apple tree. I can remember that.
Would you sell the fruit for profit at all, or was it just for your family?
It's just for family. There were enough of us that... No, everything that we had, it was for our survival. We did not sell it. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any animals that you had?
No. My mother at one time had a dog she loved, but no, we did. My grandmother and a friend of hers, I'm remembering now, they used to raise hogs back over where Lincoln Terrace School and the old cemetery in that area. That used to be a place where people store or well, they were what you called hog pens at that time. And people just put their hogs there. They didn't live in that area, but then they would go over and feed and all that good stuff. And then when it was hog killing time, it was interesting. I don't care to remember it. But my grandmother was involved in that, and a friend of hers.
And did they live here in Roanoke mm-hmm. near you?
Yeah, all in the same area. We were all in the same area. At the time there, we were all in the same house. My grandmother, my mom, my dad, my mom's children, and an aunt. It was a huge house. We were family people.
Okay. And you said what kind of work your family did. So did your grandmother help take care of all of the children then?
No, that was my mother did that. My grandmother, believe it or not, she worked. She was a domestic, and she worked. My grandmother would catch the bus in the mornings and go downtown and change and go to wherever she was working.
at that time, I can't remember, my grandmother was working for a family, the Hurt family, Dr. Hurt and their family, which was across the bridge, at the now the Memorial Bridge up on that hill. And she'd catch the bus to go to work, and then she'd come back, she'd catch the bus from there and downtown and then back home. We'd always be waiting for her to get off the bus because no matter how tired she was, she'd always have something good for us in her shopping bags. My grandmother's family descended from the Blackfoot Indian tribe, so you could see her that in her. She was very short, long hair, and she was a plump little lady, but I still have a picture of her getting off the bus with her shopping bags.
And was that your mother's?
It was my dad's mom. Okay. I never knew my mother's mom. She passed before I got to know her, but we saw pictures of her. She was a stately lady. She was short, too, in stature. So was my mom's dad. But we didn't know our grandparents on our mother's side. But Mom gave us the history. That's why oral history is so important. But she had her pictures, and she would tell us about them.
Let's talk a little bit about your school life now. Where did you attend school, elementary, middle, and high school?
Well, I started in Bedford because at that time we didn't have kindergarten for us. You can notice my age, I'm 70, so I didn't start like early. So you went directly to first grade. I went to first grade when I was 6. And then we moved, and I was due to go in the second grade. And when I came to Roanoke, they put me back a grade. I couldn't go to second grade because they said, no, go to first grade. But that was the best thing that happened to me. And I went to Gainsborough. That was a wonderful thing that happened for me, though I was upset because I was put back. But when my father took me to this school, it's still quite new in my mind. I was sitting in the hall with my dad, and this very tall, stately lady came out, and she asked my name, and I told her my name was Mary. And I was an unhappy kid. I can still feel that. And she asked me, she said, do you like school? And I said, no, I didn't. I didn't like school at all. In fact, I'd make any excuse in Bedford not to go. And she went into the principal's office, and she came back out, and she told Dad, she says, I want your daughter in my room. Her name was Mrs. Marie Lashley. I found out later that the principal was her sister, Miss Queen Williams. That started my successful school year. I loved Miss Lashley. She told me later that she just saw something in me and she just wanted to have a part of that. At the time, I couldn't see anything in me except being a scared little girl. But I loved school. I was in Gainsborough up until sixth grade. Fourth grade, I'm sorry. And that's when they closed Gainsborough, and we went to Loudoun School. It's interesting because there was no such thing as an attendance zone that everybody holds so sacred now. No one really watched where we were going to school. So I loved the teachers and so forth so much in school. My parents allowed me and my brother to go to Loudoun, to move with the school. And we walked from, if you can imagine where the school administration building is now, we walked over to Loudoun Avenue to school every day. Snow, rain, sleet, did not matter because nobody closed school. Some days, Mom would give us a dime. We'd ride the city bus, but most of the time we would walk. And we'd get to school on time, and I was at Loudoun up until time to go to seventh grade. And then everybody from Loudoun had to go to Harrison. And I went to Harrison 7th and 8th grade. And then my 9th grade year, our class was the first freshman class to move into the new Lucy Addison High School that's now the Magnus School.
Wow, that's wonderful. And you said, did you go to college after that?
After high school, yes. Mm-hmm. I went to Virginia State. At that time, it was Virginia State College. In Petersburg. I went there. I graduated from high school in 1956. And in the fall of 56, I went to state.
And what was your degree in?
My degree at state, elementary education.
Okay. Did anyone else in your family attend college, or was it just you?
After me, I was the beginning for my for my family. I can understand from my dad on his side there were some aunts who had gone to school, but I think I was the initiator of that trend, and I'm being the oldest in my family, of course, which set the stage for the rest of my sisters and brothers. My parents, my mom was the disciplinarian. She was the one who set the values, and my dad was, he was always for education. He pushed us for that, and he would work many a job so that we could go. So all of us, all seven of us, have some form of advanced education. One of my brothers went to trade school, vocation school, culinary school, and my sisters, we all have college degrees.
That's wonderful.
It is when you think of it. And my dad, he worked in people's yards. He cleaned the windows at GE and whatever he had to do to send us to school. Because at the time, there were not many scholarships available for African-American young people.
Okay. Let's talk about your life at home. Did you gather around the radio in the evening, or do you remember when you got your first telephone or the refrigerator? Did you always have those items in your house?
We did not always have those. When I lived in Bedford, we did not. We'd have a radio. My mother would always allow us to listen to Let's Pretend. We loved that show because that's where our imagination was. And plus, my mother was a great storyteller. And even when we moved, we always had good times with Mom because Dad was always working. But Mom, we would always have story time. My mother would always play Jack Rocks with us. That's when she would keep us up with our own family history to let us know about our families, because we didn't know many of our aunts and uncles on Mom's side either. It was a time that we had our Bible readings. We had to learn Bible verses. Mom would always tell us about her belief system, even though she couldn't go to church all the time. She's working home with kids, but she had a strong belief system, and she instilled that in us. And being the oldest, there were certain expectations of me as far as my younger sisters and brothers are concerned, but nobody was ever treated differently. We still are not. That was equity. But Mom and Dad, they always looked at us as individuals. They knew that. My mother would always say, she says, I have a child for everything that I need. So that's how. But our home was great. When Dad would travel on the railroad, whenever he was home, we were always a center of attention. And my mother dedicated her life to us. And we thrived on that. We never worried about what was segregated and what was not, because in our existence at home, we were taught just how significant and important as individuals, as people. And we knew there was that barrier. We knew there was that separation, but our parents never allowed that to become a limitation to us, because they didn't to themselves.
Did you ever get to travel with your father on the railroad?
No, that was not a thing. When I went to state, I rode the train to state. Other than the first time my father would take me at the opening, like in the fall, Dad would drive me to state. But when I would come home for Thanksgiving, you only came home for Thanksgiving and Christmas, I would ride the train, and I would always be on the train that some other crew was on that worked with my dad. So I always had the treat of, they would always come back and find me, take me to the dining car, and I'd always get dinner and whatever. And when I was at state, the gentleman from the train, when they would have a run through Petersburg, and that was a stop for them, they'd come up on the campus and bring me fruit and sandwich. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's very nice.
Oh, yeah. People took care of other people's children, and they had an interest in you. They knew that my family had great expectations of us. And people who knew my family bought into those expectations, so they were supportive.
Do you remember sitting on the porch? Did your house have a porch? And if it did you sit on the porch in the evening to talk with your neighbors?
Our houses, both of them had porches. Yes. That was the fun of it all. And in the house that we had, we didn't have many neighbors around us, but we could always go from one house to the next house. Mom limited our visitation, but there were certain places that we could go and talk to people. And every neighbor had an interest in everybody else's child. I couldn't misbehave at Mrs. Mack's house anymore, or Mrs. O'Neill's home anymore than I could in my own. And that was the way across the community, though. I mean, even though it wasn't, because when you say neighbors and neighborhood, one thing about Gainesburg, the entire area was your neighborhood. It wasn't just the house next door across the street. My neighborhood, to me, was all the way across this hill, down through Henry, over to Henry Street. Because everybody knew everybody else's family, or some parts of their family. And everybody knew which family the children belonged to. I hope I answered your question on that.
Yes, you did. What chores did you have to do around the house or in your neighborhood?
Well, we always had to keep our own room. Mom would assign us things. There were dishes to do. Sweep the sidewalk, make sure trash wasn't there. But our main thing, we had to look after each other. It was, you know, seven sisters and brothers, so I went to college. That was our main chore. And helping with homework, making sure that everybody did what they were supposed to do. But most of us did. I mean, we had those things. It's just like any chores that children should have today. Many of them don't.
you talked a lot about your mom was a good storyteller. What kind of stories were passed down through your generations? For instance, did your mother tell you stories about the Civil War or slavery? Or did you have a favorite family recipe that she passed down?
My mom did not talk in those areas. My mother's stories were mostly wonderful fairy tales, yarns of what would be, make-believe, possibilities. She would tell us about her family. My mother had a sister. We didn't know her, but we saw a picture of her. Name was Minnie. Minnie was a beautiful woman and long black hair down her back. She ran away and joined the circus. And my mother would tell us about her. We never met her. But Mom would tell us that she ran away one year when the circus came to Bedford. Ringling Brothers, by the way. And Mom, they'd hear from her for a while, but after a while they didn't hear from her anymore. But she would tell us about Amin and some other things, you know, with the family. But mostly, Mom loved poetry. She loved nursery rhymes. That's how we learned our nursery rhymes. And as I said before, our Bible stories, we got them from Mom early on. As far as a recipe, wasn't necessarily so much a recipe because we were a poor family, but we didn't know it. My mother could take nothing and make marvelous stuff. Till this day, I have not tasted a cake like my mother would make. I would often wonder how she did it because it was not really a cake. It was a pudding, but you could slice it, and it was just wonderful. And we laugh. We say possibly because Mom didn't have much to put in it, so she just came up with her own. And we would all look forward to what she would call some as ash cakes, where you would fix your cornbread, corn pones, or your regular bread over the ashes and the coal. And she would make what you call hoe cakes and biscuits. I'm not a biscuit eater. I don't care much for the inside of a biscuit. So where you would cut your biscuit out, that little part that's left, my mother would flatten that down and bake that for me. That would be my bread because, you know, I didn't care much for biscuits. Still don't to this day. But as far as handing out a recipe from Mom, the Mom just cooked everything well. That's all I can say.
Did you have to help her in the kitchen? Or?
Sometimes we did, sometimes not. My mother,
That was special things that we did. As I said before, our jobs were to take care of each other and keep each other out of her way when she's in the kitchen. But most of the time, we were around her in the kitchen. She'd have us to husk corn, stuff like that. She'd send us to pick blackberries. That was a down from where the school administration building is, if you could imagine, all the way down there was nothing but woods, and there were blackberry bushes in there. We'd go down and get pans of blackberries and bring those back, wash those, make sure we didn't eat more than we had in the pan. And she would do blackberry pies for us. Sometimes she let us roll the dough and that kind of thing. But we'd keep the dishes done. But Mom was self-sufficient. She had her role, and that was certain things she held us responsible for, but we were not just bound to the kitchen.
Because you were the oldest, did you have to help a lot with your younger brothers and sisters, just making sure that they were, not getting into trouble or getting them ready in the morning?
Safety reasons, yes. I had to look after them. We'd always help each other as far as getting dressed and so forth. I was responsible for my brother when we would walk to school. My brother used to call me sister, and he'd get in trouble in school. The principal would call me, Mary, come see me because your brother Ron, and he's so-and-so and so. And he'd always beg me. He said, sister, please don't tell Mama. Please don't tell Mama. And I said, I have to tell Mama because Mama will find out. But that was my job. And to this day, I still take it as mine, even though they have grown. My baby sister's in her 50s, but I still feel responsible for them.
Did you or a spouse or any of your siblings or children ever serve in the military?
My husband. My husband was in the service. He was during the Korean conflict. When he graduated from high school, he went to Howard University for maybe a year. And he left there, joined the service. He was in the service for 4 years, I think.
So were you married after his service time then?
Because when he was in the service, when my husband was in the service, I was in high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't married yet then?
Not yet.
Okay. What businesses and shops around town did your family go to?
Oh.
Did you use the market downtown?
Use the market, yes. The drugstore.
Do you remember the name of the drugstore?
Brooks Drugstore on Henry Street. We also went to Davis Drugstore over here. I was allowed to go there after a while. We went mostly the market downtown. We also had stores along our street. We go out to like Weeby's, Mansour's Grocery, Gilly's Holland Store, a store where it was wonderful hot dogs, Mr. Chili Bean, all along that street. Parents used Johnson's Realtor because that's where we had rented a house from. There was a Clark's Photo, where the rare pictures we would get made. Had them done there. Mr. Sonny Hale had his own little business of photography, and he would take pictures, especially of us at senior prom and for graduation, that kind of thing. Trying to think, we would go to the Virginia Theater, the Kaiser Record Shop we would frequent sometimes, Green's Shoe Store. I'm sure I'm missing a lot, but those were some.
Okay. Do you have a favorite childhood memory, for example, like a favorite holiday event or a favorite trip that you took as a family or a favorite gift that you ever received?
I could give you something in all those categories that would be favorites.
That would be fine.
Christmas is always my favorite, has always been my favorite. But the magic of Christmas for me was back when I was a child living in Bedford. And we lived in what was known as a shotgun house. It was just a straight house, and we had two rooms on this side, two rooms on that side, and a small kitchen. Maybe more, about four rooms, if that many.
And I can remember on Christmas Eve, this room was right off from our kitchen. Mama would keep a whole lot of stuff in there. It was always cluttered. But I can remember on Christmas Eve, I going to bed. And at that time, it was my brother next. It was just two of us, me and my two brothers. And we just knew, you know, we knew that our parents would do the best that they could for us. Mom had always just says, we don't know what Santa Claus will bring, but whatever it is, we know you will enjoy. And we would think, you know, whatever you do is fine for us. So we didn't expect a lot. But I can remember waking up that morning in this room. Was full of toys. There was a swing set was assembled in this room, outdoor swing set. And hanging off that swing set, there were clothes, bags, apples and oranges and nuts. I still have that picture. Everything was to the right in this room, and tricycle and wagon. And the magic of it all, after I got grown and understood what Santa Claus was, which I still believe in, the spirit of it is magnificent, to think that my father could do that all alone. And I'm sorry. Christmas is a favorite for me because of the story of why we celebrate. And I'm a Christian, I'm a believer, so I believe that we had a Christ child. But just seeing what all of that meant in your family, and what your family could love you and care for you so much, that in spite of the fact that you knew that you did not have what other people had as far as material things were concerned, we were rich as far as the love of people, and that always stands out for me every time I celebrate Christmas. I think about that. You tell me about a favorite gift. I think of a favorite gift as far as from what my dad gave me when I was in high school was a watch, and at the time everybody was buying Louboutin coats for their kids. And I knew my father, and trying to support all of us, he couldn't do that. My girlfriend's had, but my dad gave me one Christmas while I was in high school. My husband's favorite gift from him was when he was in Korea, he was in Panama. He was in Panama. And he sent me this album with these paintings. It was a painted album on the front and a jewelry box. And in the jewelry box, he had put a small heart in it, and he had sent that back to me. They're dear favorites, and I don't know. There are so many good things in my life that it's just hard for me to separate certain things, but those stand out.
Those are wonderful stories.
They stand out with me.
What kind of work have you done throughout your life? You had your education and you got a degree in teaching. Were you a teacher?
Mm-hmm. I taught for 22 years. But long before that, while I was working to go through school, I worked for the Parks and Recs Department at the summer camps, outdoor summer camps. And I would work with Miss Nettie Trainum and Bernard Robinson in the summer camps. When I graduated from college and waiting for my job to start with Roanoke City, I worked at Hotel Roanoke in the dining room. That was a wonderful experience for me. Even though I was a college grad and all that, I was still so much, because I was a sheltered person, so to be out in that world was a shocker for me. Once I started working for Roanoke City, I worked as a classroom teacher for 22 years. Then after that, I was principal of schools, a couple of schools. Went to central office as supervisor. And one year I was out of central office to open a school, Her Park Elementary School, because the principal had retired, had taken a leave of absence at the last minute. So I had two jobs. I was the elementary supervisor in the afternoons, and I was principal of this school during the day for a year. Then I went back to Central as supervisor. Then I was promoted to director, and then later on as executive for elementary programs. I was with City Schools for 42 years. Loved every moment. I left that job loving it. I still love it. It's a highlight in my life that I could do that.
Do you still volunteer with the schools at all? Or?
Yes, I volunteer some, and then I have what we call the early retirement program, which allows me 20 days where I can work in schools, and you can get a supplement. But I do that, but I also do extra things. I still conference with principals a lot when they call and ask my advice on some things. I spend my time reading. The library at the New Run Academy for Mathematics and Science, that was a highlight for me my last year, because I had great input in the design of that school, the community, and with the architects. It was, and to see that come to light, and to go by there now, it's just a joy for me to know that I had anything to do with it. And in that school, the community and staff named that library after me in that school. So I read in that school a lot, in the library. I love it.
It's wonderful. Did you use the Gainsborough Library?
Oh, yes. When I was in high school, I was a volunteer here. My freshman year, my ninth grade year, Miss Lee and a lady named, her name was Beatrice Mitchell, but we called her Sugar. And they were such wonderful people. I would come here after school and shelf books. Sometimes when new books would come in, I would unpack those books. Had to get my homework done before I could do any of it, though. And at that time, I was courting Mr. Hadley. He was a senior in high school. And, you know, my parents did not allow me to have company very much, but they did allow him to come to see me some. But he would come by the library here, and Miss Lee and Sugar would tell us, okay, you can have 10 minutes, and that's all. And she said, you will not go in those shelves. You will sit right out here where we can see. So he would come by, and we would talk for a little while. Sometimes he'd bring me milkshakes, and they would tell me, they said, you can only, and you couldn't eat out there. So they let us go back in their office, and she'd let me drink my milkshake and talk to William for a little while. And then she'd tell him, it's time for you to go, young man. She's working. And we caught it in this library. This library represents, just giving a stability to us and so forth. So I would come to work looking forward to his coming by to see me. And surprisingly enough, it's amazing how things go on. If you're facing the library, on the right-hand side, there used to be a huge evergreen tree. I found out later, my son, he was escorted his wife in junior high school at that time, and we would allow him to ride his bike down to her house, which was over here on McDowell Avenue. He'd ride his bike. He'd stop at the church's chicken, pick up two pieces of chicken, ride his bike. She'd get her bike. They'd ride down here, sit under this tree for a picnic beside this library, and look at the old Clayton house and dream about how they could get married and redo that house, remodel that house. So this, the library, represents a lot for me and my family. Yeah, but William Hacklin, it makes me smile.
That's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful Valentine's Day story.
You see, with the drugstore being across the street, I could, he would stop by there with the football team, because he was quarterback on the football team. And they would stop over there, and I'd know once I'd be working at the desk, and I'd see them all gather. I knew he'd be coming pretty soon. Yeah.
Who were some of the strong community leaders in Gainsborough that you can remember?
That I can remember. Well, I would say our ministers in our churches were, and I'm thinking back to Reverend James, who was at
First Baptist. Well, Frederick Sampson at High Street, when I was a young, I adored him. He was one of the patrons for the library who would come in that I would see. Mr. Holland.
Is that Alfonso?
Yes. His generation, and my dad, I know I'm getting up, but his generation, you look at him and my dad, those men, they've always shirt and tie and always dressed, you know, every time you see them, no matter what. When my father would get off from work and he'd walk home up the back alley, he'd be dressed in a shirt and a tie and hat, you know, and shine shoes. That's just a part of them. I was thinking about that area when I think about Mr. Holland. Of course, when you say Gainsborough, you would, Dr. Harry Penn, I just think was everywhere, you know. I'm pulling a blank because as a child, the ministry in my church, which was right beside Gainsborough School, the Mount Zion African Methodist Episcopal Church, which is, we're celebrating 125th year this year. The minister there, Reverend Paul Caldwell, Miss Lee Sugar, at the neighbors.
Was Miss Lee a role model for you?
Oh, indeed. She and Sugar. Miss Lee was so, such a stately lady, but she was so warm and caring, and she set examples for you. She was always in the mode of preparation. She always wanted you to be ready for no matter what. I remember when I graduated from high school and I was to be one of the speakers in high for the graduation, and I had written my speech, and my teacher, Miss Hattie Austin, had critiqued and critiqued and critiqued it because she was wonderful. And I remember walking in here to work, and Miss Lee asked me, she said, "Have you gotten your speech read?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "That's good." And then a little bit later she comes, she says, "Mary," and I said, she says, "Come back." And she'd set up this area and she said, "I want you to deliver now." I had to do that for her. She and Sugar were my audience, you know. And everybody cared that you did things well. And even though you had families that were the families that stood out in the community, there were no insignificant people as far as I was concerned and growing up, because people just took time for you. But yeah, I can still see Miss Lee smile, and she was one of many.
What kind of cultural events happened in Gainsborough? Do you remember entertainers who came to the Dumas? Did you ever go see entertainers?
I didn't. I was a child then, but, you know, my father would tell me. And in learning my history, I knew that Duke Ellington would come. I knew that. Louis Armstrong, I knew that. We couldn't go. I mean, children just did not. But we knew that our parents and adults did. And later on, as we found out how famous these people were, and then we would talk with Mr. and Mrs. Barlow after we had gotten grown, sometimes my husband and I would go by and they would let us eat in the dining room where someone at the table where either Louis Armstrong sat to eat or somebody would. It was always that kind of, yeah, but we would hear about all the number of people who would come through.
What did your mom and dad, did they ever go to performances?
My father did. My mother was not a goer. Was not. And when my father was in town, he and some of his friends would, but my mom was not much. My mother was a homebody until we were up. I mean, I was good and grown. And then when my sisters, my younger sisters, three younger sisters were in school, my mother became very active with the PTA. But before that, my mother was right at home.
How has Gainsborough changed over the years?
Drastically.
Has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse? Are there some things that you miss about it?
There are some things that I miss. when you start tearing down buildings and those kind of things, and when in your young life you're not quite sure what it all means. But I can remember the demolition of Gainsborough School. I can remember when my church was torn down. We left it before it was torn down, but it was in order for all of this. I can remember some of my friends out of Northeast, their homes. They're losing their homes. My aunt, who lived in the area where the Civic Center is now, them losing their homes. I believe in improvement. I do not believe in the displacement of people or misleading of people, which is what happened. People were told one thing and other things happened for them. It's a beautiful area now, but I have to really stop and think where my childhood is in all of this. And the only thing I can use as a gauge is this library and St. Andrew's Church. And then I try to see how did I walk around the curve to go to my church? Where were the stores when I would come across the hill? Where Orange Avenue is now, I have to stop and think how the high school yard came all the way down to the park, and then you had the creek that's now under the highway that you could throw rocks in that creek going past there. And you have to really, really get in your head where all of this is, because before my husband started paying any attention to me, I was at Harrison, and I would walk from Harrison home, but I would time it because I had noticed him at my church. He was my church member, but he never paid attention to me because, I mean, he was in high school. I was a kid. But I would wait. I'd slow my steps so I'd make sure when he was coming across the hill about the same time I was a kid. At the corner at Mr. Guinea's store so I could go home because I was going to say he's coming this way. So I miss all. I have to stop sometimes, just think of where that is, you know, where my childhood is, where my courting of my husband is. And that's why this library is the central place for me to get my bearing when I come across here.
The physical portion of what Gainsborough was is very different from what it is.
Very much so. But if you listen to the people who are still here, and the people who have been here, Gainsborough is still as Gainsborough. I mean, in my mind, I see all of these places. I listened to Looking Back on Channel 9 the other night with interviews being done with Helen Davis and her sister, Miss Bethel, and all of the people talking about what happened in this area. And so Gainsborough is alive to me. I know the physical pieces that we had, no. But to me, Gainsborough will always be in existence as long. The Gainsborough then will always be, as long as we have people who can recall, who can just bring up even a little bit. And I know I have missed a lot in thinking, because it's so much that was chalked into that. Because, see, this is where we lived. This is where we shopped. This is where we went to school. This is where we got our encouragement. And so you can't really say Gainsborough's gone. It isn't. So when I look at the signs as historical Gainsborough, that's me. That's a whole lot of people. It's people. It's not the facilities. Not to me.
Is the sense of community the same as it was?
By my not living here, but I would think that it is, as I worked in the school system and talked with people here, yes, there is still that caring piece, I think so. And you listen to Miss Bethel and Miss Davis as they are talking, and they're still living around in this. I mean, there's that love and respect for the people who lived here, for the families of people who lived here. I could call them over the phone right now, and the greeting to me would be as though I was still a child, because they'll call me Mary Elizabeth, and it will go on as though I have not grown up at all. But I think there's still that closeness. I do. I think you have some of the people who live in the area now who don't know the history and would not have the same respect, I would say, but, and I don't know if I want to say respect or not, I would say, would not have that same caring for the area as somebody who grew up in it. But I think that sense of closeness is fostered, because as we look at the houses that are developed, that have come up since then, I see people who care about that property, and then in some I see people out talking to each other, and it's not as much camaraderie as we used to have, but it's still there.
How was your life or the life in Gainesboro, how was the community affected by segregation and the civil rights movement?
We know there was a separation, and we knew the Hemingway Street Bridge was a separation for us, as far as downtown. But I think we were self-sufficient people. We relied upon each other. We know there were inequities. There still are in some situations. I don't know if it, I think this, as far as the civil rights movement is concerned, we, to me, and I was young then and in school, but I think Roanoke was one of the quietest places for desegregation to occur, but I do know that there were many a meeting, and there were people coming to the table. I know it was gradual. I was in the schools, as I said, I was teaching. I taught in segregated school, and I was part of committees as far as when it got time for schools to desegregate. We had to go to meetings together with our Caucasian counterparts at Jefferson in order to establish this relationship.
Was that difficult?
Well, it was difficult. There was that separatism. Now, when you would go to the meetings, you'd have your African-American teachers and your administration. You have your Caucasian ones. There were activities that would bring people together, but there was still that hesitancy on both parts, the dislike on one part, and on the other, the lack of trust on another. The desegregation of schools was done gradually. I think that was a wise thing. My husband was a part of that. He was moved from Addison to Lee Junior for that purpose, because we had African American students in that school. But then as it gradually moved on, people began to work more and more together. I think it took a long time for people to want to send their children to different places out of the community. Our schools suffered because we lost many of our schools in the process. As we look around us now, you don't see a school other than the newer ones, Lincoln Terrace, that's in the neighborhood, and Addison. The old Addison is the administration building, but you don't see any other plants that we can point to our children and say, hey, this is a historical site, or this is what happened with it. And I think there'll always be scars from that. I'm not sure that I'm answering your question. The only thing that I can say, it was a difficult time for everyone. And it was a difficult time for everyone because, one, we had lived separately. We knew that by law, we had to live separately. We knew that people had formed their opinions of us just as we had formed our opinions. But still, I feel there was a strain, no matter how minute it was because of certain leaders in the city wanting things to go well. There was still that strand of very thin, but it was there, of respect for of person. And I think as people worked together, it became more and more evident. Now that you may find some, if somebody else was sitting at this table with me, they would disagree. But I think it depends upon what you're looking for. Are we where we would like to be in this city as far as poverty? No, we're not. There are still things that we look at. And I look at Northwest Roanoke. I don't feel that the city pays as much attention to what is happening in that area. But it's a good area of the city. But then I can't say that. I think part of that's our fault, because we have to be careful who we put in office in city government, so that we will know that we're putting people in office who care about the total city and not just certain, not just lip service for certain parts. Articulation and operation are two different things to me. And I think going back to the civil rights and segregation piece, I think there will always be a mark on that, and I think it all stems from what happened with Gainsborough. People liked Gainsborough. They wanted the best. Why couldn't renovation come in with folk who had worked so hard for their homes and whatever? But it didn't. So if it didn't, then why weren't we honest with people? So you still, in the city, to me, you still have a trust issue. And I think we will always have that trust issue. I'm not quite sure I answered your question there, because it's very, I'm at a different place on this. I know how protected I was as a child. I know how my values, the values that are part of me, and I was taught to accept people as human beings. But some of us have not gotten to the place where we can do that. We still see a color, and we still see situations when we're, you know. And so, but I think, as far as Roanoke is concerned, if it's ever a place with the opportunity to become a model as to how a city can melt and become one, this is it.
That's wonderful.
This is it. But we're nowhere near that, but I think it is.
You think we can achieve that?
I do. I think with believers and people who will be above board and honest, doesn't mean you always have to agree, because you'll always have naysayers. But if there's ever a place with that opportunity, I feel this city, I've always felt this city is the place to do it. Just go, if we go out to any of our social events, let's say you go to the market or on a Saturday or a Friday evening, and you're there and people are there for dinner and whatever. I'm just as comfortable stopping and speaking to people at another table. I don't know them. They don't know me. People will take, if somebody breaks the barrier, they will take time to talk. And I think that's where it is. I just don't think people want to step over that line, because it takes everybody to do that. I have to do it. Sometimes you have to do it. And we can't fear it. Am I thinking that segregation still does not exist in the hearts of some people? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But we can't change that. The only thing we could do is change the situation so that their hearts can change. But as far as desegregating the area and trying not to have the black, white, Roanoke is a prime place. 20 years from now, somebody may disagree with me.
Well, we're actually pretty much at the end of the interview, but I wanted to close by asking you, is there anything else that we didn't cover that you would like to share with us?
I don't think so. I'm delighted to be a part of the city. I'm I'm so grateful to be an African-American female who had my upbringing here with a cadre of people who just cared. Schools where you had teachers, ministers, churches where you had people who cared what happened to you. They helped you develop that talent no matter what it was. To have experienced families and being a part of a family where there was so much love and understanding and nurturing, and then to be a part of that in other families, my friends and so forth. To have people like Miss Lee and Sugar in this library to just ground me and to look back on just my life and looking back on the life that my husband and I had as young people, and to just be able to feel good about it when I stop and think about the good things. And it makes me smile and makes me feel so good. And so my memories are great. Did everything that happened, was it all wonderful? No. I had my bouts with the segregation piece. I run up into some terrible things, but I think my parents and my church just instilled in me that, you know, you get stronger because of that.
Well, I just want to thank you for participating.
Thank you. I'm so glad you all had me.